The House Committee on Health and Human Services on today, March 9th, and I'll also call a public hearing on House Bill 2102. We have people who are wanting to testify on this.
Those names.
Can't either.
Okay.
Is this
Rolf?
Yes, Rolf Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. And are you Andrea?
Kim Cobrain.
Kim Cobrain. Okay. Yes. Great.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Tomei and committee members. My name is Rolf Olson. I'm on the Board of Nursing. The Board of Nursing has 9 members, and I'm one of the 2 public members on the board. I've been on the board for a little over 5 years, and I'm a past president of the board. I live here in Salem, Oregon. This bill revolves around an issue that we've had several times in terms of real cases in the past. Whenever a applicant for a nursing license, whether it be a RN or an LPN or a nursing assistant, whenever there's an application for a license or a certificate, there's certain criteria that they have to pass. And one of those in our rules is their criminal background. And there are listed in our administrative rules certain major felonies, felonies against persons, that if they have had that kind of a criminal history, they're going to get a denial of their application for a license. If they have had a criminal history that does not involve one of those listed crimes, then those are looked at on a case-by-case basis in terms of how harmful potentially is this person to the public. Have they had rehabilitation? What are their character references and so forth? The problem that the board has is that at the present time, in order to find out about a person's criminal history, we have 2 methods, and one is to ask them, and we do that on an application. They're asked the question, do you have a criminal history? And the second way in which we find out is we do a check through our Oregon criminal records database, and we have one person on the staff that actually goes through each applicant's application and checks the criminal history. But that only relates to crimes that have been committed in the state of Oregon. So we have no access to the national database that is supervised by the FBI. In order to get into that national database, we need to have fingerprints. And with our population becoming more and more mobile, we have a lot of nurses that are wanting to endorse into Oregon from other states. They already have their license in another state. They want to endorse into Oregon. And so we use their application, and we need to take their word for what they say their criminal record is or is not. And of course, we still do the Oregon record check. But we have had experiences in the past where if we had known what the criminal history was, which had been fabricated on the application, they wouldn't have been practicing in the state of Oregon. And other states have the fingerprinting legislation, and they do criminal background checks nationally, and they even find that 10 to 15% of those that are endorsing into their states that know that they're going to be checked, that have to give their fingerprints to that board, 10 or 15% of them actually continue to lie on the application, and so they don't get the correct story from those applicants. It's very difficult just to rely upon self-disclosure. So we feel it's important, and if an individual does get a denial of their application based on a criminal history that we find or would find through a fingerprint check, a national check, of course, they still have due process. They don't have to take, if there's been a mistake, there is a remedy for them, and that is to contest the denial. And of course, this is at an administrative level. It's kind of an informal process, and I think that kind of a error could probably be worked out with any kind of without any kind of litigation. But there is due process available to work out any problems that might arise through a erroneous matching of fingerprints. The only other thing I'd say is just an aside is that the way the bill is written, it refers to licensees, to a license and licensees. We actually quote license nursing assistants as well as registered and practical nurses. In the nomenclature of this bill, we just use the term license or licensee, and it's the intent of the bill to cover nursing assistants as well, who are actually certified and go through a certification process.
So, Mr. Olson, are you anticipating an amendment to this bill?
We've discussed it. We've talked to our attorney through the Attorney General's office, and it's, I guess, in a little bit of a gray area whether or not generically the term license or licensee is good enough to cover the nursing assistants as well. I think it would be our preference probably if it was procedurally, if we were able to do it, to include wherever licensee appears to say certificate holder or an applicant for a license to also use certificate. And there's two places in this one paragraph, paragraph 11. The board may require each applicant for a nursing license, or then it could say or certificate, and each licensee or certificate holder. So that would be in the first line, and then also on line 32. So procedurally, I don't know how that could be handled, but I think it would read more clearly, and there wouldn't be any question about it if we included certificate holder and certificate in those places.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Olson. And yes, Representative Greenlight.
Thank you for appearing here today. I'd like to ask you a general question. We have, as you see, three bills before us asking for the power to require full fingerprints from people who are otherwise, who are not accused of anything or not, may not have done anything, and I assume every other board, I assume we'll have the CPA board in here pretty soon, we'll have every other certifying and licensing agency in the state in. There is a growing number of people in our country, both on the political right and on the political left, who are growing a little suspicious of the power of the government, particularly in the times of the Patriot Act. And if we follow this to its logical extreme, and I guarantee you we will, this isn't ridiculous, we'll soon be getting full fingerprints from thousands of people in our state, completely innocent people, all they want to do is work, and entering those full fingerprints into the FBI files. Do you see any civil liberties concern here? Do you think that my constituents may say, hey, wait a minute, I want to make sure we have safe nurses, but getting full fingerprints from thousands of Oregonians who want to do nothing but help the public and get them entered into the FBI records in a time where there's growing concern about civil liberties is any kind of a problem?
Certainly without a good reason to require a fingerprint, there's a civil liberties problem. For health care and for the protection of those persons that receive health care by these licensed individuals, these are individuals who are ill and vulnerable. And so on the basis of public safety that is taking care of those people that are ill and vulnerable, I think it's justified. If we read in the newspaper about a nurse or someone in the healthcare profession that had taken advantage of a patient in some way, in some criminal way, and we read that in the newspaper, I think that we would feel that our process needed to be amended, and justifiably so, to protect the public. And I think that this is just stopping the board acting with incorrect and incomplete information when they go through the licensing process.
May I follow up, Tom? Yeah, I've been involved in private employers that have been involved in this, and as I remember, you can hire an organization like Equifax for $100 to do background checks that will turn up an extraordinary amount of things. Can you tell us the other alternatives that you've considered and rejected for protecting the public and for getting criminal background checks as a part of your exploration of moving to this particular solution?
We've talked about it over the years. Going to fingerprinting has been something that's been a slow process for the Board of Nursing. We've talked about it ever since I came on the board 5 years ago. And I don't know of any alternative method of checking a criminal background nationally other than through the fingerprinting process.
May I follow up again?
Follow up.
Let me ask the executive, have you explored and rejected a variety of other alternatives for getting national background checks as most private businesses use in the state to do the same thing?
Yes. Madam Vice Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kim Cobrain, and I am the Program Executive for Compliance and Investigation with the Board of Nursing. I have been with the board in various capacities for about 10 years, and the board has considered on and off different alternatives. What they have been trying to do is find the least intrusive way, which is why they were relying on self-reporting and doing the criminal background checks here in Oregon. Most of our people are going to be homegrown applicants, if you will, but those people who come in from out of state almost by definition haven't had any existence in Oregon, and they have no activity. So they're not given the same vetting process, if you will, and we don't have the same degree of reliance we can't create the same degree of reliance on our vetting process through an Oregon-led check, because it's not going to tell us. We've had occasions where when we do find there's some indication that perhaps they've been involved in activities in other states, other jurisdictions, and asked the applicant, would you please go do this and get this information for us, sometimes they will and sometimes they won't. It leaves us as the in an awkward situation in terms of, well, do we then let this person proceed through licensure and have that trust position with vulnerable members of the public or not?
Sure. Can I ask a question again? I'm obviously not communicating in a clear way. I'm not arguing the question of whether we need to do criminal background checks on nurses and nurses' aides. I'm asking a very specific question. Has the board considered a set of other alternatives before deciding that we want to do full fingerprints on thousands of Oregonians and put them into the FBI files? As most other businesses who are equally concerned. I was a corporate officer of Kaiser Permanente for 30 years, and these issues were very important issues. But I'm asking this specific question. Have you looked at alternative methods to try and do the objective? I'm not arguing the objective. I think the objective is a good one. And I'm asking, have you asked around? Have you tried other things? Have you contacted organizations like Equifax that do this sort of model? What else have you tried and rejected in order to achieve the objection, is my question.
Madam Vice Chair, members of the committee, it's my understanding from discussions with the Oregon State Police and other state agencies who have been faced with similar issues that the only way to tap into the national database, which is run by the FBI, is through fingerprinting, that there is not an equivalent database, if you will, that is available for us. We're not interested in the fingerprints, we're interested in that report. I personally would hope that the FBI doesn't keep track of those fingerprints, that the process here is that the fingerprint cards are returned and destroyed. But I clearly cannot be held responsible for how the FBI does or does not conduct its business. But to get to your specific question, Representative Grenlick, is what has the board looked at? There doesn't seem to be many options. I'm sure the board would entertain any other options there might be. But the only ones that we were aware of were the LEDS Oregon check and then the national check done through the FBI.
Would you like to make your presentation now?
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I was here to answer questions if they might come up, and Mr. Olson was presenting our testimony.
Great, thank you. Any other questions of this panel?
Madam Chair, thank you, if I may.
Yes, please.
Thank you very much, and I apologize for being late. Wednesdays is my back home radio program, so I start that early and try to get out by 8:30. What I'd ask you, Ms. Covering, what are the current checks outside of LEDS? Do we actually use some FBI database, or is there any other database that we use for criminal background checks?
Madam Vice Chair, Representative Butler, no, there is not. The only check we do right now is the law enforcement data system, the LEDS check.
Okay.
And the self-reporting.
Mm-hmm.
Follow-up.
Other states, do we know what our adjoining states, again, I apologize, this may already have been answered.
No, I don't believe it has. Other states, 30% of other state boards of nursing conduct fingerprinting checks in addition to internal checks. The other percentage just do internal checks. Through a system similar to us. I don't have personal knowledge of what every single jurisdiction does, just that I know that there is a trend moving towards fingerprinting because of the mobility of the nursing population.
Madam Chair, just for the record, so that and particularly so my colleagues in Portland will recognize that in California, before you can take the Certified Public Accountants exam and the Uniform National Exam, we had to have fingerprints taken for the FBI files. So it's not uncommon for those of us who just prepare financial statements and tax returns are already in a FBI file database. And I didn't object to it at the time. I still don't object to it now. As a matter of fact, I've thought of that a number of times as people have offered me opportunities to do things I wondered whether or not I'd ought to try and do. So have I got my fingerprints all over this or just what? So at that particular point, it may be a deterrent to crime in the future. Not that I would have seriously gone out on that direction, but knowing that anything that I do, whether it's driving my car or whatever, my fingerprints are in a national database, and that's given me some assurance that I will stay recognized as long as my fingerprints are intact. So I guess in that regard, if there are people who would object to this, maybe the situation is we ought to start it for all the new applicants, some kind of a voluntary program, and then recognize that from that point forward. It may not work for those that are already in the system, but certainly 35 years ago it worked for me in California.
Thank you.
Representative Boone.
Thank you.
Okay. Sandy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kim, just a procedural question on investigations or
whatever. When you have a nurse licensed in another state that might have had a complaint filed, when you run the background on that, does that then trigger additional information from that state? In other words, if they had submitted fingerprints that then Oregon would have access to?
If I understand your question correctly, would another jurisdiction be able to share this background check information with us? No, they may not. The federal, as I understand it, the FBI has some very strict parameters about the use and redisclosure of this information, and you have to be authorized to receive the information for a very specific purpose. And unfortunately, you cannot then redisclose or reshare that information. You may hear testimony today later. There is a concern that it has been expressed by the long-term care industry, in which they also have to fingerprint folks and do thorough background checks for persons who are going to be working in their facilities. There is obviously a duplication of process here. That's not efficient. We've been working with them trying to understand how we could create efficiencies and stop the duplicative costs. One of the greatest barriers we have there really is what the FBI requirements are. And what we're hoping to do is to keep problem solving this and working with the FBI to find out if there's another level we can take this to. So it's a process for licensing and a process for employment. But gee, does that person really have to go through this, through the fingerprinting twice? Do they have to pay the costs twice? But on the other hand, one needs to be very cognizant of creating that big brother concern. So there's that balancing. But it's a work in progress, I would say. So it's a long-winded answer to your question. But no, we are not able to obtain that information.
A clarification of what that was. Kim indicated that the long-term care industry presently has access to the FBI fingerprint file?
No, I'm sorry. No, they do not. They also have to run... They go through the Department of Human Services that does have fingerprinting authority, and they would be able to speak much better to that process than I can. But there are federal law requirements about if you're receiving federal monies about who may or may not work in those facilities.
And just for the record, Madam Chair, if I may, from Kim, how many people are presently hold the licenses that you issue through the State Board of Nursing, and how many new applicants on an annual or biennial basis do we have?
We currently license and certify approximately 60,000 individuals, including RNs, LPNs, nurse practitioners, certified nursing assistants. The concept before you in this bill is to go through this vetting process for new applicants for any of those areas, or if something comes across during the course of an investigation that would lead us to believe that this is necessary in that process. In that vein, what you're looking at is approximately 7,000 applicants in a biennium, and that would be who would be subject to this fingerprinting. We were not suggesting going back and trying to fingerprint or go through this process for persons who are already licensed or certified by the board. In a sense, you might say we've already accepted the risk of their behavior. And what we're trying to do is improve the vetting process as we move forward, not to go back in time.
Thank you.
Representative Kim.
So when a renewal license comes up, if they're already licensed in the state, they won't go through this process? It's just for new applicants in the process?
Correct.
Okay.
What we do currently for renewals is to run them through the Oregon. Again, there's a balance that is always being struck, and kind of the most bang for your buck, as it were. We recognize that the vast majority of our licensees actually live here in Oregon, and we are going to find if there's any criminal activity that would be of a concern to us through the LEDS check. We're not as concerned. We don't think the numbers are so great for persons that are licensed or certified by this board that are in another jurisdiction and going through the renewal process. So we had thought to just do it from the application process forward.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Okay. Welcome.
Andrea Meyer. Jim Carlson, why don't you come up at the same time? Sure.
Vice Chair Tomei, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. It's my first chance to appear before you this session, so it's good to meet you all in this situation. The testimony I'm going to give on this bill is identical to the concerns I'm going to raise about all three, with the exception that there is a particular aspect of another bill that, if it's okay with this Vice Chair, I would just mention in my testimony, and then I don't need to keep coming back up. The issue of using fingerprints and background checks has been a concern for the ACLU since the issue arose in this building. It really, and I want to give you a little bit of background, it started, for the most part, more and more interest in the early 90s with doing history checks to protect children. So in 93, Teacher Standards and Practices Commission's TSPC was given authority to do it, and also the Department of Education for bus drivers. Now, one of the protections put in both of these situations was that, and one of the concerns I'll talk about in a moment, was that, for instance, if a school district wanted the information, they did not then receive the very personal information about someone's criminal or non-criminal activity. It went to the Department of Education. There were rules set up to make sure that the nexus was there for the types of potential types of crimes they may have committed years ago, and whether that indeed triggered whether they were able to get the job or not. Because this is very personal, this is not very personal, but this is, you're asking for people to give information and do this on, as Representative Greenlick has already mentioned, on a lot of folks who've not engaged in any criminal activity. The use of fingerprints or background checks as you've been arrested and you've engaged in criminal activity. So our concerns were, at the time, and I think at the time it was probably assured this is a very narrow scope of the world, and you can see each session it's been increasing. We were concerned that it was wrong to send fingerprints off to the FBI without any safeguards to ensure that the FBI was not adding fingerprint databases, fingerprints of innocent people, these people who have not convicted of any crime, to any database. We were concerned that if someone had committed a very minor offense or an offense many, many years ago, that they not be blackballed merely because of their past history, if their, even though their history is irrelevant to their doing the job safely and effectively, both to the community and in their profession. We also argued, our concern was that the widespread distribution of someone's criminal history to a lot of people, particularly in smaller communities, could make it more difficult for someone to be really rehabilitated and move on with their life and be a productive member of society, which they have already established that they are. So there were a number of safeguards put in. There was an agreement that there be a nexus between the job and any criminal conviction. And indeed, ORS 670.280 requires that a licensing board, commission, or agency may not deny, suspend, or revoke an occupational or professional license solely for the reasons that the applicant or licensee has been convicted of a crime, but it may consider the relationship of the facts which support the conviction and all intervening circumstances to the specific occupational or professional standards in determining the fitness of the person to receive or hold a license. It's the joys of quoting from a statute. Sorry, it was rather a long sentence. The other safeguards put in was to ensure that no permanent records of the fingerprints of law-abiding citizens were and individuals were retained by the FBI or any state agency. And so it requires in the law that fingerprints be returned to the state and destroyed. It also, in elsewhere in a different part of the state law, prohibits the state agencies indeed from forwarding the fingerprints to the FBI as unless if the FBI changes its policy and were to start retaining them. We are currently, and I've been working with Oregon State Police to look at the policies and the practices of the FBI. In the old days, it used to be a card. So the card would get sent off, and we'd know, we'd have a check, the card would get sent back. Now we're using data imaging, and things get sent off on the computer, and we're a little more concerned about ensuring that indeed the practice and policies of the federal government are being adhered to before we send the fingerprints off. That was a commitment that this legislature made in previous policy. In addition, the other thing in the laws that have been was to avoid widespread dissemination of criminal histories, and so there was again that nexus requirement that there be very clear rules as to what types of conduct would trigger someone not being able to get the license or work in that position. There are a number of bills floating around this session, and I would urge this committee to not move these bills because there's sort of an omnibus bill making its way in general government on this side, and it's House Bill 2157. And they've heard testimony already. The Oregon State Police is working with all the folks out there because, as Representative Greenlee pointed out, I mean, this is just, there's mission creep. There's a continued desire to expand, and we're very concerned about that. And that law needs, we need to have the law all in one place. We need to have the safeguards that I've discussed all in one place, and there are some changes that are to be made. I mean, right now the agency may come up with rules to ensure the nexus and the protections and the safeguards, but it's very loose. There's no one providing oversight, and it used to just be Department of Human Services, very limited world of who did this, and so you had some assurance that that agency had the safeguards. Now we're expanding what agencies, what licensing boards can get this information and how they're going to handle it. And we think it needs to be really carefully looked at in terms of what positions, who's looking at the information, how far the information is being disseminated within the licensing board or the community, and that there be a clear nexus between the information and the job, and that there are standards set up to do that check. I want to also just touch briefly on the fact that there has been some talk that was mentioned of now the idea of retaining this, because there are more than one check, or a check may happen. That troubles us to no end. I mean, what we are speaking about is retaining fingerprints of people who've never committed a crime in the government. And I think, as Representative Greenlee pointed out, the ACLU has worked in great coalition with a very right-left national folks on the Patriot Act and issues, be it the NRA, the Eagle Forum, and a lot of the conservative taxpayer unions. We've all joined together in alarm and concerns over the increasing data collection that's going on by the federal government, and we really don't want Oregon to be contributing to that. I just want to point out one concern on one of the other bills, and then I will conclude my testimony. Thank you all for listening to my long bit about the history and our concerns. House Bill 2061 is the one set up for the chiropractors. And, you know, again, we think the whole question of who should we be doing background checks on? What's the scope? Is it safety? That could be food handlers in our society. I mean, where do you start drawing lines? They really need to be narrowly tailored. So I have general concerns about adding them, but then you'll also see that they are added.
Chair, could I ask a little question?
Yes, question. Yes.
This is to get into the public record on that bill. Won't this testimony have to be given in a hearing on that particular bill?
Open up the hearing on House Bill 2061. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Vice Chair and Representative Greenlee. So Andrea Meyer, ACLU of Oregon, also wanting to speak briefly on House Bill 2061, renewing our earlier testimony, and just pointing out that in addition to chiropractors, they are opening the floodgates for, if you look on page 3 of that bill, ancillary personnel. They are defined on page 4 as a chiropractic physician staff personnel who are directed or designated by spoken or written words or other means to follow and carry out the chiropractic physician's order or directions. As far as I could tell, that could be the receptionist, that could be anyone working under the employ of a chiropractor. And again, our concerns are just how far do you want to open up the state obtaining this kind of personal information, the potential disclosure of information, and the need for it on people who've never who are, many of them, most of them, almost all of them, have never been convicted of any crime. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions and would urge you to look at letting the general government in this 33-page bill, and Oregon State Police is here as well to answer questions, but they have brought all the stakeholders together in working with on all the details on this.
Madam Chair.
Just one moment. Sandy, do you have that bill? And is my understanding from what you whispered to me that not all the stakeholders were included in this? Is that correct?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
2157.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I have the bill in front of me. It was brought to my attention yesterday that it was out there. This looks like, and I haven't read all the language, so I'm not sure what the total scope is, but they have like the Parks and Recreation, Department of Transportation, Department of State Lands. I'm not sure if it covers or would cover the healthcare governing boards, like the Board of Nursing, et cetera, which I believe is why these three bills were drafted.
Vice Chair, to me, right. ACLU obviously was not involved in the drafting of this, but there are many amendments being worked on. It's my understanding, and certainly someone from Oregon State Police can testify, they had a meeting with all of us, all the agencies, and I believe a number of the folks who are here today attended that meeting. The safeguards being put in place and the narrowing and all those issues at least can be addressed in one omnibus bill. There are problems with the bill. They're being looked at and fixed, but it would be an appropriate place to add them. It's everyone's being thrown in there.
Okay. Thank you, Andrea. Thank you, Sandy. Representative Boone.
And Andrea, thank you for your testimony. I appreciate that. I'm really concerned about some of the things that you testified on when you talked about crimes having been committed in the past. It's my understanding we're talking about people coming into the state, not the people who are already licensed by the Board of Nursing. And I'll just keep this to the Board of Nursing right now, and then I'm going to add the piece about the chiropractors and that. But it's a good concern of mine because of some criminal behavior patterns, and I'm sure Representative Greenlit can weigh in on this maybe too with his expertise. But sometimes criminals will commit a crime spree, if you will, serial murders, whatever, leave the area, move on, take a hiatus, a break-in pattern, for whatever reason, and something else comes back when they move somewhere else, or they may stay where they are, re-triggers it, they recommit, for whatever reason. A really good example, and I know it's a little bit different because we're talking about nursing and people applying for that, but the current case that was on the front page of the Sunday Oregonian about a parole officer and Mr. Mignot, who committed suicide in prison. This guy is in our system right now. He works for the state of Oregon in the Department of Human Services. He's a parole officer. He works with kids in the Oregon Youth Authority. He's been reported several times. He's been on administrative leave. He's in the system. I assume we have his fingerprints. I assume that criminal background checks have been done on him. But for some reason, this guy recommitted his crimes many, many times. And I'm sure we're all going to be shocked when the truth comes out about this whole thing. Now, moving on to the staff in a chiropractic office. The concerns I have here, and I believe it's appropriate to include these people because they have access to our patients who go to chiropractors, personal files, their credit card information, their social security numbers, and their medical history. And so I honestly believe that they should be checked too, because what if someone, and we all know, especially in small towns, there is a smaller pool of applicants for jobs, and who knows history on some of these people. And I understand where you're coming from on this too, in protecting our civil rights and our privacy as citizens, but if someone does have a background of history in their background of criminal activity, I know that I, as a patient in a chiropractic office or a patient in a hospital or any kind of medical facility, would expect that facility to protect my personal information and my personal safety. And however they do that, by licensing people after having checked their backgrounds, I think that most patients go into a hospital with that assumption that they're going to be taken care of. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to tell a personal story to illustrate this point. In 1968, I with a group of others started what became the Virginia Garcia Clinic in Washington County. And I had a group of VISTAs working with me at that time. And at one point, we went to a migrant camp to ask the camp owner for permission to take a sick child to the doctor. The migrant camp owner filed a completely bogus criminal trespass charge against the three of us, which ended up being remanded into federal court and ended up establishing the ability of healthcare workers to get into migrant camps with the permission of parents to treat children. 35 years later, in 2003, one of the two VISTAs that had worked with me applied for a job in Arizona in the vocational rehab department of the state. Criminal background check turned up this criminal activity. Now it's possible that guy, being who he was, could have had a recurrence of his criminal activity and tried to do something like that again. But the fact is, it hadn't. But in order for him to get the job, we had digged through old newspaper articles. We had to try and find 1968 records of the federal courts, which is not an easy thing to do, prove that the case had been dismissed, which it had, but he could not have gotten that job if we hadn't been able to recreate records 35 years later, because a criminal background check turned up the information that he had been arrested in 1968. It's that kind of thing that I think Andrea is talking about, and I really wish you would just talk a little bit about the kind of cases, and this is one example, that come into this kind of concern, and why this is an issue both with the right and the left.
Vice Chair Tomei, Representative Greenlick, you're right, that is one of our most important concerns, is both those who've engaged in minor offenses or even some major offenses 20 or 30 years ago have not reoffended, have been rehabilitated, and are now applying for a job where licensing is beginning to require this, and then agencies, and the concern is it's not in state law, this is left to the discretion of agencies, and as we increase the pool of licensing entities, we're really concerned about who's setting the criteria of you're out. You don't get that job because you have a conviction. If we start doing that, we're really making it impossible for people to rehabilitate themselves. We're talking about successful rehabilitation. I'm not speaking in this situation of someone who was committing crime after crime and did not get caught. He's now in the system, and if he is prosecuted for the types of crimes that I have a very minimal knowledge about, he's not going anywhere. We're not speaking of those. We're speaking of people who have been swept up in the system and have moved past that, something that I know Representative Chip Shields works with a great deal in his professional line of work with Better People, is working with people to rehabilitate and be successful. And we also are concerned with the collection of information that occurs and the, you know, to the aspect of what you're speaking about, you know, as we start taking these images and they're sent back and forth to the federal government and to be destroyed, a requirement that wasn't set forth in any of these bills, by the way, that language that does appear in elsewhere in the law, that they be returned or destroyed. We've seen, be it ChoicePoint, and their release of information, that hackers and others are getting very personal information about all of us. I should point out, and I'm sure I'm looking for nods if all of you have heard about ChoicePoint and the release of information. ChoicePoint contracts with Homeland Security. So that's one of their clients. I think there was a recent...
Andrea, I don't know anything about ChoicePoint.
Oh,
can you talk a little bit?
ChoicePoint provides the services for many state and federal and not private parties to collect information and provide it and checks and information about people. And so they database. And they're the professionals who create the databases, and one would think have the priority of setting safeguards to ensure that their product is safe. And it was disclosed that information's been released, and the only reason it was disclosed was because California law requires that for California residents that gets disclosed. Otherwise, I don't think any of us would have found that out. And they, as I said, are contract with Homeland Security. So the federal government is using this, their resource in their database. And if I'm happy to provide the committee information about the efforts that ACLU has made in conjunction with groups that would probably all of you either belong to or affiliate with or connect with, no matter what spectrum you are on, about the concerns of the collection of information, particularly on people in this country who've never committed a crime, and how that's being collected and used both by the government potentially as well as third-party businesses for tracking and databasing you. I'm not saying these fingerprints are going to go right into that stream, so I want to be careful. I'm not trying to suggest that that's going to happen. But that's part of our concern about when you start collecting information on people who've never committed a crime, personal information. Brandon Mayfield is, you know, our prime example, too, of how fingerprints can be flawed and the analysis of those. It's not the be-all, end-all that we think maybe a year ago we all would have said, well, fingerprints are really definitive. They've destroyed this man's life to some degree in a false reading of those fingerprints by the FBI.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, while I find the discussion interesting, I have some problems connecting it back to the discussion of our health care licensing boards trying to protect the public and the issue of ChoicePoint's business decision to sell to a company which did not have the proper credential and why the necessary that making a business decision, and they're going to pay dearly for that. I mean, that will be duked out in the courts. But I also am concerned that you know, someone who is involved truly in a criminal case, even though Andrew, you indicated someone that was that was convicted of a crime, and in the case that was brought to us by the member today, there wasn't anyone convicted. It was just the fact that evidently the fingerprints were still floating around. In many instances, the fingerprints at least put the radar up that there may be a problem there. I'm happy to know that Vista Volunteer was able to clear his name from the case that was 35 years old. My concern, Madam Chair, is that we try and stay on task and on point relative to the health licensing boards that are involved here and have them make their case pro or con relative to the issue of how do we protect Oregonians and what is the level that we are willing to subject ourselves to personally in order to assure that the 7,000 biennially may be examined so as to protect ourselves from one or two cases each biennium of the folks that slip through and destroy the lives of tens, maybe hundreds, and maybe thousands. And so I would like to see if we couldn't hear from the rest of the health licensing board folks and have them make their case for the greater security that they're trying to obtain. Thank you.
Vice Chair Tomei and Representative Butler, and I would just want to leave you with the final urging that you not pass these out separately and discreetly, that these really do become part of one conversation. That, and I haven't gone into some of the details of the safeguards we have talked about in the other bill that need to be put in. They are not in this bill. I'm happy to address those if you want me to come back and talk about them. But we're very concerned about a lot of what's not in these various provisions establishing those safeguards. So with that, I will conclude and let Jim.
Thank you, Andrea.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jim Carlson. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Healthcare Association. We represent about 550 licensed long-term care facilities and in-home care agencies. I'm not speaking in opposition to the bill today, but I did want to speak to the bill. Our members have been operating under a law that was passed in the late 1990s that governs the Department of Human Services and its contractors. Our members employ about 30,000 individuals who have been being checked under this law that was passed in the late 90s, and by and large, the Department of Human Services has done a pretty good job, I think, on administering that law, and it has worked fairly efficiently. We had a lot of concerns at the time the legislation was being worked on, and I think it's worked quite well. The concern we've got around this bill and other bills is that there are multiple criminal record check bills being considered in this committee, other House committees, and Senate committees. And one of our primary concerns here is that we do not have a lot of coordination from the executive branch agencies and licensing boards coming together with kind of a unified approach to this issue. You have seen some other states who have begun to address these issues on a more unified approach. Virginia, I think, is the classic example where they've set up basically a unit within state government there that is functioning, has a central clearinghouse, and all the various licensing boards or agencies who are interested in doing criminal records checks function under one uniform set of guidelines, and there's one process. And from what I understand, that's been working quite well. Our concern has been that we've got a law we've been operating under quite effectively for a number of years now. As we start bringing in bills from the state police, from the various licensing boards, we don't want to end up with duplicative checks, because there are significant cost issues involved with getting fingerprint checks through. And so those are costs that would be borne by either the licensees, or in the case of our members, they're generally paying for those checks for their employees or potential employees. Another key issue for us is on our ability to hire and staff. We have to be able to make sure that these checks go through in as expeditious a manner as possible. And we have had problems both in Oregon in the early days of doing criminal records checks, as well as in other states, where things log jam up and you're not getting the results back in a timely fashion, and it literally puts a freeze on your ability to hire people and to staff. And so those are some significant concerns we have. So I would actually like to echo the concerns that were made by Ms. Meyer in terms of on suggesting the legislature take a unified approach to looking at the issues of criminal record checks to make sure that any necessary safeguards, checks and balances need to be put into place, to make sure that we're not messing up a program that's been running pretty effectively at the Department of Human Services for a number of years, and to make sure that the various executive branch agencies and licensing boards are kind of getting together and talking about some of this, as opposed to just bringing multiple bills into multiple different committees. With that, I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you, Jim. Any questions? Thank you, Andrea. Anybody else? Yes,
I'm
closing the public hearing.
Can I comment before you close the public hearing? Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been carrying on a colloquy with several of my constituents over the meaning of the Second Amendment and the extent to which the Second Amendment delivers a sort of sacred right to bear arms, and the concern about the historical meaning of that amendment as it applies in everyday life. It seems to me an equal concern is the Bill of Rights protecting us against self-incrimination, which seems to me is a right that's equally important. If I really believed in this case that we were using the records, they were going to the FBI, they were coming back, I have no problem whatsoever with it. But I would hope before we carry this forward, if we carry this forward, we have a chance to hear from the FBI, from the state police that manages it, talking about whether these records, in fact, as I believe they will be under the modern scene, are thousands of innocent people putting fingerprints into the FBI's database
that would cause me great concern. If they're literally being used to do a criminal background check, and that's the only purpose, and they come back or they're destroyed in the computer, then I have no problem with any of these bills, because I think we do need to protect the patients of these folks. So it would be very useful if we hear these again, or if we have a work session, I would hope we would get some testimony from the state police and if possible from the FBI on what the conditions are on the use of these fingerprints, because that would reassure me a great deal if we really did have assurance that they were only being used for the purpose that they were collected.
Thank you, Representative Cannon.
Appreciate what you said, because about 12 years ago I was fingerprinted when Lottery came out, and just listening to all the testimony here, I'm wondering where my fingerprints are.
Through a Freedom of Information request in the FBI, you'll find out.
For a guy who's going to run, wasn't even running the Lottery, but had something to do with the company that was.
No further comments? Thank you. All right. You're welcome, Representative Greenlick. Again, I'm going to try to close the public hearing on 2102, and I'm going to continue the hearing on 2061. Sandy?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. As Andrea said, House Bill 2061 comes to us from the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners. It, too, is requesting that we permit the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners to conduct a nationwide criminal records background check and to collect fees for that check.
Former representative, Dave McTeague.
Vice Chair Demain, members of the committee. The Board of Chiropractic already requests fingerprints from our Doctor of Chiropractic applicants, and we have a contract with the Oregon State Police, and we send those over to the Oregon State Police to be checked, and they are checked, and but they are only checked against an Oregon regional database. So probably 60% or more of our applicants have come from out of state at one time or another. Many of them come and go to college at Western States Chiropractic College in Portland from out of state, and then some of them want to stay in Oregon because they like it here so much. And so when we do a background check, frankly, we're only hitting on about 35-40% effectiveness in terms of uncovering something that we probably would like to uncover, should there be anything. Frankly, we don't really see very much of anything. Most people will self-report on the application forms if they've had an arrest or a conviction of some kind. So we see all kinds of, you know, small stuff, you know, somebody got busted for marijuana back in the 70s or speeding tickets or various things like that that won't even show up on the background check. And you know, if it's anything serious, the board takes a look at it. And if the representative has got a very strong statute about how there has to be a nexus between any conviction and the ability of the board to propose to deny an application. A few years ago, we had an applicant who told us he had a conviction, and it turned out he was a registered sex offender from the state of Washington. I still don't know exactly how or why they let him go through his chiropractic college program with that conviction and the problems he must have certainly knew he would have when it came time to come and get licensed. But if we made it,
Dave, if I could ask you, please. So he was applying for a license in Oregon.
Yes.
And so how did it, you can only?
Well, on the application we asked, have you had any convictions or arrests that we ought to know about? Misdemeanors or felonies or anything.
And he acknowledged
that. So we ask, and they almost always tell us, but in this case, we made us realize, what if he hadn't told us?
Mm-hmm.
What if he'd said, no, I don't know. We would have licensed the young man, and we would have never known the difference that he was a registered sex offender in another state. And so that was kind of made us realize that we were feeling, felt a little blind, a little vulnerable. there, and by instituting the background check process, we had more of an assurance that we were doing our job of public protection. I think that the public probably thinks we're already doing this to the limit that we can. And I think if you were to ask them, they would have an expectation that we would be doing background checks. But what we're doing has some limited effect of it. Currently, the Board of Nursing, I know, does a ledge background check where they had a terminal and type in a name. They get a list of names and then can check against that. We do the state police fingerprint regional state data. That's limited in its effectiveness. We need specific statutory authority. That's the FBI requirement. We have to have specific statutory authority authorizing our different agencies to have access to the FBI data. And that's why we have to introduce the legislation and ask for your approval. And I think you're all right. We all really ought to have this conversation as a global conversation. And I think that's beginning to occur with House Bill 2157. We've been talking with the state police and looking at that legislation as well. And on the other point about chiropractic assistance, it was never our intent to expand our criminal background check to cover our certified chiropractic assistance. So that can be dealt with through amendment if need be.
Thank you, David.
I have a quick question, a comment first. When someone in this state applies to as a nominee for a board or commission, they have to undergo a background check. And that's just to be on the commissions or the boards here, their appointments by the governor. So something you said kind of, I have a question, maybe you can answer it. If this guy was registered as a sex offender in Washington, I'm not an attorney nor a police officer, so I don't know, how does that follow them? When this person left the state of Washington, did he have or she have a parole officer? Is there some way to have that follow them? Because that seems like an easy way out of that particular situation. You're registered as an offender, but all you need to do is leave your state and then you can start over again.
Well, I think sometimes you make arrangements in the new county that you're moving
to. You have to do that.
They would have to. I think that's what happened in this case, but I don't remember specifically.
Okay. Anyone else? Thank you, David. Andrew, did you want to speak again? Okay, thank you. All right. We have no more questions. I'm going to close the hearing.
Madam Chair, before you do that, I'm looking at the statutes dealing with occupational professions of chiropractors, and based upon the discussion we've had, I find it very interesting that a person could have been convicted in another state, and that we wouldn't have any information on that through any system that would be available. And the only thing that could trip that person up is that in the process, grounds for disciplinary and refusal of license or suspension of a license under the chiropractic code was the fraud or misrepresentation, which you wouldn't know about based upon that. So I guess that's grounds for the concern that would have been expressed. That maybe what I was specifically looking for in the chiropractor's code is what language gives them the authority to do what they do presently with an FBI background check, to find out if that's the language that may be being disseminated for the omnibus discussion, which is being had in another committee. Mm-hmm. So I'm anxious that it do be that this should be looked at holistically amongst all of our licensees. And while I am not in favor of setting up a new department in the state of Oregon to hold and examine fingerprints for any short period of time and then returning them or destroying those fingerprints, I don't know if that does any good, except as to the extent that those folks have been committed or have committed a crime, have been convicted of a commission of a crime, and they become part of a nationwide database for folks that have been, in fact, committed crimes and have have actually been adjudicated. So I'm interested to hear the balance of testimony as well, but would be interested also to see the actual language in the code that provides the chiropractors the ability to do what they're doing right now. Maybe Dave can give me that information afterwards.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Butler. Where was I in the process? I'm closing public hearing on House Bill 2061. And I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2059. And we've got a list of them. Hi, Kate. Kathleen.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kathleen Haley, and I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Board of Medical Examiners. And what we're requesting in House Bill 2059 is similar to what you've heard in prior testimony, and that is a nationwide criminal record background check for applicants for licensure to practice medicine, podiatry, and acupuncture in the state of Oregon. The board's mission, as you know, is to protect the citizens of the state of Oregon from impaired, inadequately trained, or unscrupulous health care providers. Under the board's current system of background checking, an applicant for licensure or license renewal is asked about a criminal record, similar to the other boards that you heard from this morning. If the applicant or licensee is not completely forthright, we do not have the ability to verify whether or not they have a criminal history. I think the concern here for the board, and the Board of Medical Examiners debated this in much the same way that you are. They had some of the same concerns that Representative Greenlick had. And it was a tough call to make this the only bill that the board was going to bring forward this session. But 70% of our applicants come from out of state. So we have no way of knowing whether or not they have a criminal history in the other state. Currently, the board is not authorized to obtain information on criminal histories through the FBI's National Crime Information Center, otherwise known as NCIC. Federal law does authorize non-criminal justice agencies to obtain this information so long as they have a very specific statute. So you actually have to get the FBI to approve the statute that you're bringing forward, which we have done with this bill. And why is it important for the board to get this information? Well, it will help the board to determine whether or not someone is fit to practice medicine in the state of Oregon and whether or not they have been convicted of something like Medicaid fraud or sexual abuse. One of the other determining factors for the board as to why they were swayed that this was an important initiative for the board is that the neighboring states of Idaho and California both do background checks. Well, we did not want to be the state sitting out there saying to those with a criminal background history, come to Oregon because we're the state that does not do the background check through the fingerprinting system. I wanted to give you a case example. In the year 2000, the board did deny licensure to an applicant who had been revoked by another state board. He was revoked based on a felony conviction of assault on his wife. And the nature of that assault was such that there was a weapon involved and there was also sexual aspects to this assault. The state in which he was convicted expunged that conviction, but the medical board refused in that state to reinstate his license. He did answer yes to our question, have you been convicted of a crime? However, he then went and applied for a position with a health clinic on a Native American reservation in Oregon and did not answer truthfully there. One of the things we are hearing from the credentialing bodies, like hospitals are, it would be nice if the Board of Medical Examiners did this background check and then we would not have to do it subsequently because we'd know that they had been checked at the time of licensure. So our proposal is to cover those folks who are being licensed currently, as well as a review of some who may be under investigation by our board. And the steps are, as you heard, we would have the fingerprints go out to the applicant. They would come back to us, and they would go to the state police. And talking with representatives from the state police who are here this morning and prepared to testify if you would like to hear from them, they do destroy those cards. So those fingerprint cards are destroyed or retained by the agency. The board, our board, would receive those criminal background checks from the state police and then be reviewed by our investigative department. I want to assure you that every person who works for the Board of Medical Examiners signs a confidentiality agreement. And we also have them sit down one of their first days with the board and watch a videotape about the importance of confidentiality. This board handles very sensitive patient records, and we would treat these criminal background checks with that same level of sensitivity. Relative to the issue of whether there would be discipline or a denial of license, I think the Oregon courts have been very clear that there has to be a nexus. There has to be some connection between the conviction and why the licensee would not be safe to practice in the state. So that's what the board would be looking at, and they would be doing that in conjunction with their assistant attorney general. The criminal records check is anticipated in our 2005-2007 budget and does not include any additional fee increases to fund this. The cost is really just for the fingerprinting itself to the applicant, and the board would be prepared to absorb the cost of the processing. It would require one half-time office specialist position to handle the actual processing within our office. The board does believe very strongly that the background checks will give us the ability to continue to provide patient safety in Oregon. I'm very happy to answer any questions. And as I mentioned, Tricia Whitfield is here from the state police if you have any questions of her. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. Any questions? Representative Greenwood.
Thank you. I was happy to welcome a constituent to a hearing. I really appreciate your zealousness and your real concern, which you have now, to get good criminal background information. Absent the statute, which you haven't had, have you hired a private firm to do these background checks, which certainly is in your statutory power, or have you even done a Google search on all the applicants, which clearly would have turned up that sexual abuse conviction or the assault conviction on the other?
Madam Chair, Representative Greenlick, we have not done Google searches on our applicants for licensure. We do have the ability to get other state licensing boards' actions. So we found out about the revocation on that particular example in the other state. Through that, we ask for every state that they've been licensed in, and we have some national databases to check there, and we did do that on this particular case. And we do it on all of our applicants currently.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome, Representative. Any further questions, Kathleen? Thank you. Yeah. Oh, Representative Cameron.
Yeah. Thanks for your testimony, Kathleen. Just a question of this other bill that's over in general government. Have you seen that bill, or have you been a part of that bill?
Representative Tomei, Representative Cameron, I have sent a representative to that. We would be happy to be a part of that bill as long as it has, as I said, the FBI requires that we have very specific language. Believe it or not, when licensing boards started to approach the FBI for this authority, they didn't want to give it to us initially. So they require very specific language, and that's what we would need. And we have it in this current bill.
So it's not in the other bill that was referred to us?
I would need to take a closer look at it, Representative.
Okay. If it was, would you be supportive of getting that done in one central way?
Madam Chair, Representative Cameron, absolutely.
Okay. Representative.
Are we going to have the state?
Yes, we are. Any other questions for Kathleen? Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you.
And I would call up Patricia Whitfield.
Good morning, Madam Vice Chair Tomei, members of the committee. I'm Patricia Whitfield, Oregon State Police Section Director of Identification Services Section, and we were here today to provide some clarification of some of the questions and to help support the agencies that are bringing forward work that will most assuredly come towards our office in one way or another. In answering some of the questions that have come up, if I may clarify that what we're talking about here today and the House Bill 2157 that's been referred to, that's the bill that we are sponsoring on the general government, provide a type of cleanup to bring these types of checks for non-criminal justice purposes, applicant-type fingerprint checks, that, it's true, has grown in the number of state agencies that have had those needs, and each session it seems there are more that have that type of need to do not only an Oregon check but an FBI check. And knowing that it is important to have some safeguards and some security within that confidential information that they would be gaining through that process, we are putting forth a bill that will hopefully help in all respects. Public Law 92544, the federal government for non-criminal justice purposes, is quite restrictive, that it does require a fingerprint check to gain access to the FBI files. And that is for non-criminal justice purposes, and it can only be done through a state statute that has been recognized by that state and must meet certain criteria by the FBI, and that is to require the fingerprints, because for non-criminal justice, non-law enforcement purposes, you cannot gain access other than through those fingerprints. So many of these agencies have drafted legislation and had bills passed only to find out later that they couldn't actually gain that access because the language was not approved for the FBI. In gaining access as an authorized agency, it's the term that is generally looked at when the legislature deems that an agency is authorized, then in fact they must go through a background check themselves, our office. It's our requirement that we know that the folks that will be accessing and reviewing these criminal histories also don't have a background that is going to be contradictory to receiving that information. They'll go through training and certification through the law enforcement data system and will be subject to yearly, if not more often, audits for their activity and their use in accessing the criminal histories. So there are those types of things in place that we require because they're using that confidential information. We also encourage that agencies establish rules that, again, restrict the use and the dissemination of the criminal history information, and we have tried to put that into House Bill 2157, and there are amendments coming forward that will clean things up even more than that. Let's see, a question that came up or discussion about whether the fingerprints are retained or not retained, and I don't think that any of these three bills mention, as Andrea Meyer had, that there is no language in there to specify that the prints will be returned to the Oregon State Police and destroyed. Nearly all of the agencies that currently submit to us have that in their statute, that we require that the fingerprints come back to us from the FBI. They cannot retain them, and then we don't retain them. We send them back to the agency. We're looking at that as well in 2157, whether it's appropriate that we should destroy them at our point of contact or, again, return them back to the agency. But they are not being retained on the national level, not for non-criminal justice purposes.
Can I ask a question on that, please?
Just one moment, please. Could you repeat that last statement, please?
That the fingerprints are not retained by the FBI on the national level.
They are not retained, so they are returned or they're destroyed?
And let me clarify that, as Ms. Meyer brought up, previous years, we still receive a physical fingerprint card from these agencies that we process.
That is process. Could you explain what that means?
Yes. We conduct, we will do a name check of the Oregon criminal history, computerized criminal history files, CCH files, which are housed in LEDS, law enforcement data system. So when you hear someone refer to a LEDS check, they're generally referring to the criminal history file that we create and maintain at my office. We will do a name check as a sort of pre-screener and determine whether there's a match or not. Each time that we find a potential match, we will compare the fingerprints to what we have on file. If there is no match based on the name, then we will run a technical search through our automated fingerprint identification system, and determine whether the person has a record or not based on positive fingerprint identification. And likewise, if...
And, I just want to understand this process. So going through that process, is that on the web, or is this just totally contained within the Oregon State Police?
It's only within the Oregon State Police.
Thank you.
There is no other means to do a fingerprint check in the state of Oregon other than through our office.
Okay.
And because we are the keeper of those records, we create and maintain criminal histories that are based on arrests throughout the state. They are confidential and not open to just anyone. So we would... That is completely contained within our office. Once we determine...
Madam Chair, based upon arrests or arrests and convictions, just arrests?
Well, the fingerprints, excuse me, Vice Chair Tomei and Representative Butler, when a person is arrested, they're typically fingerprinted, and that's the means to have that agency report to us. All felony and sex and drug type misdemeanor crimes are mandated to be submitted to our office, and that's in the form of a fingerprint card. That's what creates the criminal history.
Mm-hmm.
Then ultimately our goal would be to obtain the court disposition to attach to that arrest. But the court decision does not have a fingerprint attached to it, so we are basing it on the fingerprint which comes on the arrest card.
Okay.
That makes
so that's what's maintained at the time of arrest, and so someone, as Representative Greenlee indicated, some folks about their business were falsely accused, may have been arrested or detained, and this shows up many years later. That's based upon the fact that at the time of arrest, the fingerprints were taken and then they were maintained. Is that right?
Right. If the fingerprints were taken and they were sent to our office, we would more than likely have those prints on file.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And then if the court disposes of that and also sends to our office, then we would have the court record to show what took place.
Representative Greenlee, I know you had a question.
Yeah, I did. Are those records either then or when you send them to the FBI digitalized?
Madam Vice Chair and Representative Greenlee, currently they are. We are transmitting to the FBI an electronic image. And now we're talking about a couple of different things. But in both cases, criminal arrests and these non-criminal justice fingerprint cards, we are digitizing those and sending them to the FBI.
So if I may follow, destroying the fingerprint card doesn't matter. You send the card back and it can be destroyed, but the digitalized record is transferred to the FBI.
Correct. And I was actually going down that path, and I'm sorry, I kind of got off track. We do still have a physical card that comes to us from these agencies, and that is the card that we talk about destroying it or returning it. I have put forth an inquiry to the FBI to have them help me understand how I can show or support that they are not retaining a digital image like they were not retaining the hard copy, and I have not received that information yet, but that is something that is a reality that is a new line of questioning that we need to be able to answer.
And you'll share that with us when
yes.
you get that information?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you.
One other aspect that I would like to help further explain, if I may, that I think you had a couple of questions regarding whether agencies have looked at alternative means of doing background checks. And Oregon State Police, by statute, does need to provide anyone a copy of another person's Oregon criminal history based on name if they make that inquiry. We call it an open record. And it is, in fact...
Could you state that again?
Open record?
The whole statement. It is open to anyone who asks?
Right. 181-560, I believe, is a statute that legislature passed law that if... one person wants to check on another person's criminal history, you can do so through our office based on name.
Name. So all I had to do, or not just being a legislator, my next door neighbor could do, is
that's
contact
right.
the Oregon State Police and they could get a criminal record check on someone?
Correct. Vice Chair, Madam Chair, yes, they can forward, again, name, date of birth, and current or last known address. The process, how the law reads, is that we will do a name check of the Oregon criminal history files and report back only a record of conviction or any arrests that are within the last year when which there's been no acquittal or dismissal. So the law allows that information to be returned to the requester. If there is such a record, the subject of the inquiry, the person that's being checked on, will also be notified that this person is checking on you. We don't know why, and they can't necessarily change the fact they're checking, but this is the information they will receive. And that person, by law, has 14 days to review that. Because it is a name check, it may not be them, because there are people with the same names. There are criminals that use other names. If that is, in fact, not them, they may contact us, and we will determine, we will ask their fingerprints, we will just do a check, make sure it is not them, and then be able to report back to the requester that there is no record. If, in fact, it is that person, maybe have disposition information that might change the outcome of the record, we will work with them. And then ultimately, by law, if there is a reportable record, it will go to the requester. If there is no record, no convictions, no arrests within the last year, then the requester will get back a notice that there is no record for the state of Oregon. That's how it's allowed in Oregon.
How many of these requests do you get a year?
Madam Vice Chair, I don't have that information with me now. I can certainly get that for you.
Could you get to the whole?
Quite a number of them.
Thank you.
What's that statute, please?
Clarification statute.
Statute number, please.
I gave you 181560. I believe that's, I may be.
181560.
I think we have somebody here who's going to be giving you the statute.
Procedure being information requested by other than criminal justice agency.
Right. That would be the correct statute. And there are, as far as I know, other states have similar processes. And it would be somewhat cumbersome to go to each state and do that same check, but that is possible. It is only for the state of Oregon, and it is based on name. So we don't happen to believe that that is the fullest check you can do, but it certainly is a check that can be done, and there are those similar types of checks in other states. There are some private companies, I believe, that go state to state and purchase information. You can purchase information from Oregon Judicial Information Network. You can purchase information from the Department of Corrections. You can only purchase from the Oregon State Police an individual's record, as I just explained. You can't buy a database. But I believe there are companies out there that do that and claim that they're providing a nationwide check because they are buying this information from all of the different states. But it really can't be compared to the fingerprint check. It is not the same type of data. It is not the same positive means to identify. And that was the only clarification that I had of what I'd heard this morning.
Representative, and you said that the person who's been requested, the person's name's been is told that someone's looking. Do they give the information who is looking for them or who's asking for the check?
Madam Vice Chair, Representative Boone, the response that the subject of inquiry would get from our office is simply the name of the company, the business, the individual that they have requested information, and then a copy of what we would ultimately release to them unless they provided information to us otherwise.
Will you finished, or we interrupted you so many times, so we ruined your train of thought.
Madam Vice Chair, I think that was it. I tried to make notes of the questions as I listened this morning, and if you have other questions that I could answer, I'd be happy to do so now.
Thank you. Any other questions, Patricia? Thank you very much, Patricia. Is there anyone else who wishes to
testify on this bill? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2061. Oh, 2059, sorry. And any comments or announcements? If not, we are adjourned. Thank you all.